It has been nearly 6 months now since Russia invaded Ukraine, and we're learning more about what went on behind the scenes in the lead-up to the Russian assault. The Washington Post this week is reporting on how U.S. intelligence discovered Moscow's plans and convinced President Biden to act. The Post reports that the U.S. warned Ukraine and European allies, but for a time, they were skeptical.
In fact, the reporting paints a picture in which allied nations showed a staggering amount of mistrust about the credibility of U.S. intelligence. Some of the revelations are stunning, others sobering. Two of the reporters who led this investigation join us today. Isabel Kershodian is the Ukraine bureau chief with our editorial partner, The Washington Post. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Shane Harris is intelligence and national security reporter for The Post. Hi, Shane.
Hi, Celeste.
You know, what surprised me, Shane, was the scope of detail in U.S. intel that they had very early on. They seemed to have access to many layers of classified Russian information, and they discovered what you and your partners described as a plan of staggering audacity, one that could even destroy the post-World War II security architecture of Europe. How did the U.S. get such accurate information?
Well, this was really a quite impressive feat by the U.S. intelligence community, which, as we write in the story, had penetrated every level, really, of Russia's military, political, diplomatic structure. They had satellite imagery, intercepted communications, information from human sources. It is surprising the volume of information that they were able to access. And what they ultimately did with this was put it together to try and paint a picture for policymakers of an imminent invasion. About the only thing they didn't know was when or if Vladimir Putin would actually order that and pull the trigger. Although as they got closer, they got pretty good on the dates, I must say. But early on, it was just very clear to senior members of the Biden administration and people in the intelligence community that all of the pieces were being put in place. And the information that they found was so compelling that it led them to ultimately brief President Biden in October and say, essentially, we think this is real. We may be looking at a war in Ukraine.
So, Isabel, you were in Moscow at the time. There's been a lot of talk about the fact that there are Russian moles in the Ukraine government. Is it possible that there were human sources within the Russian government, maybe at high levels, who were speaking to the Americans?
Well, it certainly seems to be that way, you know, not just in the Kremlin, but in the military command, all the way down to the front lines. And I think what's interesting is that we haven't seen Putin really make any big changes in his security services, really in his government. So we have to assume that, you know, some of those sources are still there.
So, Shane, the intel was presented in a very careful way for both President Biden and Vice President Harris. How difficult was it to convince the president and vice president that this was serious?
I don't think it was ultimately that difficult because of just how compelling the intelligence was. And you know, we know that as the picture developed, too, the Americans were getting actual communications by people, you know, on the battlefield as well. I mean, they really were kind of inside the military command. So I think that President Biden understood and even talked a little bit about this publicly when he talked about how significant the intelligence capability was, that they were getting, you know, the spoken or the written words of the people who ultimately were putting these plans in place. And then all of us publicly did see a slice of this when satellite imagery, a lot of it from commercial providers that is put out on social media or that was reported in the press, showed these massive buildups of troops along the border, ammunitions and supplies. And so I think that President Biden came to a pretty decisive conclusion. And from our reporting, he never wavered really off that. He always thought that the intelligence community was correct in its assessment that an invasion was more likely than not.
So it seems like this was a difficult message to relay, not only within the U.S., but also with European partners. And one of the concerns was about the president of the Ukraine, Zelensky. Isabel, not only did the U.S. have concerns that Zelensky was not up to this challenge, but European partners were as well. Can you tell me a little bit about the view of Zelensky among NATO allies?
Yeah, we have to remember this is not, you know, a traditional, he didn't come to power from any kind of traditional background. You know, he's pretty young, 44 years old, former comedian, and, you know, was kind of swept into power really unexpectedly and had never really dealt with something like this. So I think there were a lot of questions about how he would handle this. You know, if he was going to flee, similar to what we saw in Afghanistan with the president there, you know, if he would just capitulate immediately. He'd never really been tested to this degree. And the other kind of thing that he was famous for was, you know, kind of looking weak in that phone call with Trump that ultimately led to the first impeachment. So I think it was warranted that, you know, they kind of didn't know how he was going to be able to handle any of this.
But also, it sounds from your reporting as though Zelensky himself did not fully believe the U.S. intel at first. Is that right?
That is right. And it was him and other people within, you know, his close circle. They seemed to believe that maybe there could be an escalation, you know, more focused on the east and the, you know, eastern Donbas region where Ukraine and Russia had already been, you know, kind of at war through proxies for the past 8 years. And for them, it was difficult to believe that, you know, Russia was going to really go for a full-scale invasion and all-out attack because they'd seen the same buildup of, you know, forces in the spring. And they thought this was a maneuver by the West to get Ukraine to agree to more concessions regarding, you know, this conflict in the East for the past 8 years.
And Shane, this is all because, and this comes through throughout the reporting, the delicate balance that not just Biden, but all of the NATO allies were trying to keep, that they were trying to support Ukraine and even train Ukraine and arm Ukraine militarily without arming them so much that it became a provocation to Russia. How long did that balance persist? That attempt to keep balance, did it persist right up until Russia invaded?
I think it did. And you know, this is every decision that the Biden administration made on what steps to take, and importantly, you know, what kinds of arms to send to Ukraine was predicated on this idea that they must not provoke Russia into a war with NATO. And you even saw that in the early days. And one of the themes that we've heard consistently from President Zelensky in Ukraine is send us more weapons, send us bigger weapons. We'll remember in the early days, too, when there was this kind of debate over whether to send MiG fighter jets to Ukraine from elsewhere in Europe. And people in the Biden administration resisted that, feeling that it would be a provocation of Russia. And some people in Ukraine and elsewhere said, it kind of looks like Russia is already provoked. They've just invaded this country. But it was really on their minds from the very beginning. And there was this very vivid scene that we recall where Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, still carries in his briefcase a series of note cards that he wrote after one of the key briefings early in the fall of last year for the president, where he writes on it, problem, how do you underwrite and enforce the rules-based international order against a country with nuclear capability, quote, without going to World War III? And so this was really top of mind for senior U.S. officials. They genuinely feared this.
Also, the Biden administration ultimately dispatched the CIA director, William Burns, to Moscow to speak directly to Putin and essentially say, we know what you're up to and there's going to be real consequences if you continue. Can you tell me a little bit about this meeting and what unfolded?
That's right. Yeah, there was this on November 2nd, Burns flew to Moscow at President Biden's instructions. And he went to the Kremlin and he was actually escorted into an office of a man named Yuri Ushakov, who is Putin's foreign advisor and himself was a former ambassador to the U.S. Burns had been the U.S. ambassador to Russia and so really had the most kind of up close and personal experience dealing with Putin. And I think that Biden thought it would be a good idea for that reason to send Burns. Putin actually wasn't there physically for the meeting. There was another wave of COVID infections in Moscow and the city was on lockdown. So Putin had fled to Sochi, this resort city. And so they talked, he and Burns, on a secure line. And basically, Burns said, just as you put it, he said, look, I'm here bearing a message. And he left a letter from President Biden. He said, you know, we know what you're doing. It was very important that he convey to Putin that the U.S. intelligence community understood his planning. And so there was no trying to deny it. But ultimately, Putin just recited, according to Burns, this usual list of complaints about NATO expansion, how it was a threat to Russian security, and that the leadership in Ukraine was illegitimate. And Burns recalled that President Putin was very dismissive of Zelensky as a political leader. And I think this is a very important insight because I believe that in Putin's mind, he thought Zelensky was weak that he would not be able to control the government. And I think he had reason to believe that the Ukrainian people would not stand for their country against this Russian aggression. So we now see in hindsight of this kind of dismissive, very cool Putin, who maybe was just profoundly misjudging the way history was going to go. And Burns flies back from that meeting and tells the president, I don't think that Putin has made an irreversible decision here to invade, but my level of concern has gone up and not down.
You know, one of the most surprising parts of the piece for me was the fact that many European allies really did not have a lot of trust in U.S. intel, and partly because of missteps and also misused communications during the Iraq War. There were other reasons as well. 4 years of the Trump administration had eroded trust. Germany and France especially felt U.S. intelligence was flawed. And you wrote they thought it was prone to political manipulation, according to one security expert. Isabel, can you explain some of the reasons why European allies hesitated to believe it?
Yeah, if you look at Germany and France in particular, I mean, they probably, of the European countries, had, you know, the closest kind of relations with Russia, maybe outside of Hungary. But they had been doing business with Russia for a long time. You know, Chancellor Merkel, President Macron, you know, they were communicating with Putin, and he was genuinely lying to them about his plans. And they had more trust in kind of their communications with him than they did, you know, in the U.S. intelligence. And at the same time, though, the U.S. kind of wasn't sharing everything with them because they had their own, you know, sources, means, methods that couldn't be disclosed. And the Europeans didn't have quite the same intelligence.
So, Shane, we have sort of two sides of this. We have the one concerning portion, which is that it really took the U.S. some time and effort to get people to believe that their intel was correct and to trust them. But on the other hand, you see, as a result of actions oftentimes on the part of the Biden administration, the expansion of NATO and a different world now post the Russian invasion. What do you make of all this?
Well, I think that one of the really dramatic aspects of this kind of struggle that the Biden administration had to get the NATO allies persuaded that Russia was going to invade, it did, as we've said, have a lot to do with historic distrust of the intelligence. And as Isabel said, the fact that the United States was not really showing its work. It wasn't saying, here's the conclusions and here's all of the data underlying those conclusions, you know, the individual sources and whatnot. But they did something very interesting, and I thought actually like very skillful diplomatically. The Americans said to the Europeans, look, we know you want to give diplomacy a shot. We will go along with that and we will try, but we're going to ask you to also bet that we might be right and to start preparing militarily for a NATO response in support to Ukraine. So they pursued these two tracks, kind of each side betting that they were right and thinking the other was wrong, but allowing for the reverse to be true as well. What's remarkable now, though, is that the allies are essentially in lockstep on so many positions now. And for all of the kind of the mistrust and the skepticism that existed between these different camps, once Russia invaded, that all fell away. And we saw everyone lock arms and impose these historic sanctions, you know, Germany canceling the Nord Stream 2 pipeline development, really dramatic steps, and a bringing together of NATO that I don't think anybody prior to that invasion would have imagined was possible, certainly not in such a short period of time. So a lot of these, you know, historic kind of mistrusts, I think they're, I don't want to say they've gone away, but, you know, in talking to European officials, they acknowledge now that they were wrong in their call, at least as far as the intelligence went. And maybe that will go towards building some more trust in the U.S. intelligence community in years to come.
That's Shane Harris, intelligence and national security reporter for The Washington Post. And we also spoke with Isabel Kershudian, Ukraine bureau chief for The Post as well. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.